And finally, in addition to all these other contacts, the Ayyubid sultans appreciated the pilgrimage trade. They certainly fell within the traditions of Saladin and his very generous policies. They encouraged, they protected the movement of pilgrims to Jerusalem. And at one point, Al-Kamil, for his own reasons, it's a way to annoy one of his nephews, signs Jerusalem over to the Crusaders. There's a brief restoration of Crusader rule of Jerusalem in the so-called Sixth Crusade. I don't even know if it deserves to be called a crusade. Frederick II shows up, realizes that he can't do much, and he signs a treaty with Al-Kamil, the third great sultan, Ayyubid sultan, and gets Jerusalem back under safe conduct, largely as a negotiated settlement. But what it points out is that these sultans appreciate it. There was a lot of money to be made, and keeping up good relations made the Italians happy because they were making money on the pilgrimage trade. And when this system breaks down in 1244, these rogue Turkmens come in and take Jerusalem. Well, that's just as much a mess for the Ayyubid sultans as it is for the Christians. Finally, they do get high marks in their efforts to promote Islam in its building programs, its madrasas, the establishment of the great intellectual center at Cairo. But also, as I mentioned, this was a consortium of rulers. So cities such as Aleppo, Diyarbakir in Turkey today, Damascus, all of these cities became courts and centers of the type of patronage that Saladin and his brother Al-Adil had sponsored. And so the 13th century is legitimately seen as an important cultural revival in these areas. And that's part of that important shift in the axis from Baghdad to Cairo and its associated cities in Syria, that this is becoming the new intellectual center. And finally, the control of the holy cities, Mecca and Medina, gave all the more legitimacy to these rulers in Egypt. And so what comes out of the early 13th century is a really impressive set of institutional and religious successes by the successors of Saladin, even though these rulers in the long term really didn't build the kind of political legacy that allowed their dynasty to endure. Nonetheless, they put in place institutions that allowed their Mamluk professional military elite to build the kind of effective state that would consolidate into a single unitary state, a very successful Muslim power, as well as finally drive out the Franks of the coast. It's the Mamluk sultans who are the final heroes of Islam, and they also defeat the Mongols. So the Mamluk sultans have two big advantages in their reputation thereafter. Well, I want to look at the second Islamic power I mentioned, and that's the second part of this lecture, and that is the Seljuk Turks of Asia Minor. A group that are of immense fascination to me, since I spend a great deal of my career dealing with Asia Minor, Turkey, in all of its aspects from earliest times, up until the early Ottoman period. The early 13th century was a defining moment in Asia Minor just as much. And there, the Seljuk sultans of Konya, of Rum, owed a great deal of a debt to the Crusaders, particularly members of the Fourth Crusade, and that is in their destruction of Byzantine power in Constantinople. And I always like to put it this way. Through the 12th century, when the Crusaders first showed up and there's this battle going on between Seljuk Turks and their Christian opponents, Byzantines and Crusaders, culturally, in many ways, Konya and the lesser Seljuk states were living in the shadow of Constantinople, the cultural, political shadow, the legacy. I mentioned from the Byzantine viewpoint, there was always the hope they could convert and bring these Turks into that cultural orbit of the Byzantine world. Well, the opening of the 13th century, particularly the sack of Constantinople in 1204, meant that the Seljuk Turks would emerge out of that shadow into an Islamic day. And that Islamic cultural day was forged at Konya in the generation after the sack of Constantinople, which disorganized Byzantine power, removed those governments to those splinter empires who put their attention on the capital rather than worrying about other concerns in their regional states. And that gave a succession of sultans, the successors of Kilji Arslan II, the man who had won the Battle of Myrokephalon, to build a effective Islamic power on the plateau of Anatolia, and an Islamic power that not only unified all the key cities, Konya, Sivas, Kayseri, Amasya, Tokat, Niksar, all of these cities, but to link them in a trade network and to build the types of institutions, the Islamic institutions, and an independent Islamic civilization that was not some type of satellite of the Byzantine world.